Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well in this ridiculously hot weather. I was away on holiday, had a fabulous holiday, my first holiday in over three years. It was absolutely amazing, actually. It really was good to get a break, you get a fresh perspective on stuff, you know. It was great. And anyways, in the light of that and the fact that we have such extreme heat in the UK and more to come, I thought I'd do a piece on sober holidays and just talk you through some stuff, share some of my own experiences. I've got some experiences from sober club members that I thought I'd just throw in. So hopefully this podcast will be super useful for you, particularly if you're early stages and you really want to crack this in the sunshine, because there's absolutely no doubt about it. The sunshine is such a big trigger for so many people. Just whatever's going on for you, when the sun comes out, it's like, oh, maybe I'll just have one. Really so frustrating that the way it can set people back, and the assumptions, and the, you know, that oh, because the sun's out, everyone will be drinking, even though we know that alcohol is terrible for you, it's terrible for you anyway, but it's awful. You know, alcohol and the heat really do not mix. It's the last thing you need, to be completely dehydrated. One of our sober club members was going to the cricket, and she's never been to like a big match like that before, and she was saying, oh, you know, what's it going to be like? Everyone's going to be drinking, and you could sort of almost, it was lovely that she shared it. You could almost hear the wine witch in her head talking about how it was going to be, like everybody popping open their champagne, and the way we glamorize this is just bonkers. But of course, lots of us get sent a message back saying, sweetheart, you know, just take your cool bag full of dehydrating water and some nice alcohol-free drinks for if you fancy some. And do not even think about sitting in that ridiculous heat, you know, pouring toxic liquid in. Just bonkers. Anyways, so we're going to do that. I'm going to give you a bunch of tips. So you might want to have a pen and paper ready, if particularly if you're early stages and you do actually feel a little bit nervous about, you know, about the next few days, or if you're about to go off on holiday, because of course, you know, we're coming into peak holiday season. So hopefully this episode will prep you up a little bit for all of that. But before we do that, we've actually got a sponsor for this week's podcast. And usually if we have a sponsor, I would sort of read you stuff about them and tell you about them. And I'll do that first, because Recoverlution is the world's first recovery platform, a hub dedicated to content, community and wellness. And it's founded by addicts for addicts. And they have a growing team of 30 plus across the UK, Denmark, US and India. And they've created unique and premium content, and it's driven by best-in-class technology. It's an all-in-one platform with multiple touch points, and as well as facilitation of recovery group meetings based on the platform, it's a home for recovering addicts and offers access to a knowledge library and all of that stuff. But having said that and told you a little bit about that, I chatted to the founder of Recoverlution, Daniel Fincham, who has just such a hard-hitting story. And I thought, well, why just tell you that stuff about Recoverlution when actually I could get Daniel to share his story? It's not often on this podcast that we hear from someone who's actually, you know, hit that rock bottom moment, and it's, you know, it's really not a bad reminder to hear just how impactful, you know, this transformation can be. So enjoy the interview. My guest is Daniel Fincham, founder and CEO of Recoverlution. Daniel, it's lovely to chat to you.
Likewise, it's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And really interested in this, the world's first recovery platform, you're calling it. And I love the fact that, well, you explained to me how the name came about with the two words.
The Recoverlution sort of came to me in my very early recovery, because I didn't even know what recovery was. I didn't even know I was in recovery. I knew a lot about addiction. And it was only really when I got into recovery, I was like, wow, like, how did I not know about this? And it's not just about the recovery journey. I think recovery brings you back onto like your spiritual path of sort of who you are. But then you evolve. So it's sort of a play on recovery and how you evolve and that evolution process. Mm.
Yeah, I love it. Take us back then and tell us a bit about your story and what was going on for you.
Yeah, okay. So I was a professional alcoholic most of my life. Grew up very sort of loving family, really loving upbringing. You know, I bought into the notion that, you know, you do well at school, you go to college. I went to college and I wanted to be a lawyer as I was growing up. It was that fear of failure, really. I realized that even though you can excel at your academically, it could boil down to a bit of chance, a bit of luck, a bit about who you know. I couldn't take that risk of not fulfilling it. So I buckled it. I got an A at A-level law, but I went to university to study business. And at university, I really got into gambling and drinking, you know, but I was much more of a binge drinker. And when I knew that, you know, the first year you only needed to get 40% and it didn't matter, didn't count towards your end result, you know, I just, that was it. I couldn't understand why people were actually working, but it's because they were doing courses that they believed in. And I'd done a course that I just knew I could pass to get to the next stage, to get to like work life. So I drank a lot and I gambled a lot. You know, fruit machines and things while I was at university. I worked in my summer holidays to just catch up with the money that I knew I was going to blast. I spent my student loan in the first month being there and I had to go and get a job. And so I finished my degree. And then when I got to work, everything I'd been promised, I was like, this can't be it. And I just didn't have the belief in myself. I relied heavily on drink to be who I wanted to portray myself to be. It just, I became more and more ingrained in needing to drink. I felt a lot of anxiety in social circumstances, to the point where if I was presenting at work, even though I was comfortable with what I was saying and I was comfortable with going in to present, I would shake. Like I'd feel that adrenaline and all those eyes on me. And so I'd start drinking just to take the edge off. And drinking, you know, it was more about anxiety and to get me, you know, that Friday feeling. I wanted that Friday feeling all the time. I'd get like the blues after like festivals or big events where people would just let go and give themselves to that moment and just get on it. And I just wished I could live in that moment. That's what I went where I wanted my life to be. I wanted to live in these moments of where I was present almost. Mm. I wasn't in my mind. So by the time I was 36, I was the VP at this software company. I built this house, had three wonderful children, but I was exhausted. And the drinking had really escalated by this point. I was drinking like four bottles of wine a day, unbeknownst to anybody, you know, a bottle in the morning, a bottle before sort of 11 and 12, a bottle when I'd have a bit of a nap because I'd work a lot remotely, a bottle in the evening, and then a bottle in the afternoon and a bottle to get me to sleep. But as my drinking had progressed, everything else about me had fallen away, any hobbies, interests, everything. And I became my role in life was like a provider, and like work became who I was. And it was like, if I can provide, no questions were asked, because like, he can't be an alcoholic because he's got this high pressure job. You know, we lived in a mobile home for 2 years. I was commuting from Chester to London on a weekly basis. I was in Boston, Copenhagen. I was living at train stations, trains and airports. I had a flat in London where I worked in the week, which I could escape. And it was just all drinking. I never checked, you know, I was in a bag and I never sat and thought. I was just like, I will get to this and alcohol will get me to this point. And like falling out of love with my job was, whether it was like the straw or the log that broke the camel's back, that, you know, I'd given up, everything about me was gone. And these moments of like when my boys and my little girl was brought into the world, they didn't shift me. Like they did not change me. And I was devastated by it. Like I just thought I'd feel this immediate love and this transformation. And I was living in fear because I was hiding everything and I was drinking so much. And there'll be times where I have the children in the car, I'd be spending obscene amounts of money gambling. And it was just building, building, building. And I saw a therapist when I was in London who also said I was an alcoholic. And he said, I can't believe how many bullets you've dodged. If these hit you, you're not going to be able to survive. So, you know, I'd had health problems. I found out when I was born with one kidney, that didn't stop me. I had gastritis, I had blood pressure to the point that people thought I was an 80-year-old man. And I was diagnosed with like anxiety and depression at this point. So I had my dad and my oldest son down in London for a few days because like people were trying to monitor me now. And I was drinking, I was drinking heavily at work. If I was in Boston, I would go to the bar late of an evening to make sure I had two glasses of wine with me in the morning to wake up. I had needed them. And it was a really sad day when I woke up to realize that I was dependent on drink. I could not function without it. I could not stop shaking without it. I had like almost seizures where people didn't know what was going on. And I'd have to like find a way to get to a drink and it would get me back. So my normal was this like emptiness of like, I had like this rock in my chest, like a knot. And it felt like someone was like squeezing it and all this like poison was coming into like this empty void in my bed where my belly should be. And then the rest of me was just like hard, like all the organs in my lower back, I could feel them. They were like almost failing me. And so down in London, I said to my dad that I can't go back. I was too pissed. And I went back to my flat and got a couple of bottles of wine and just necked them till I was unconscious. And that's what I was doing. You know, drinking wine of an evening used to normalize my brain to be out of work, and it stopped, and it was just to be unconscious. So he came down and he was on my couch when I woke up. He said, look, do you want to go to a rehab? And I said, yeah. And that morning we were on our way to Wales to a rehab. And that's then what I thought I needed. I needed this magic wand, and this 10 grand was going to fix me. And it was a CBT based rehab. And I got it. I got all the theory, the science. And they were like, you're not alcoholic. This is just a crutch. And I was like, brilliant. This is fucking amazing. You know, it's amazing. And I got the tools. And then I came out and work were really good about this. I said, look, I've been diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And they were like, well, no, what, you know, it was like a story that my life was a story that people would tell people, like with like pride. It was like, this guy's doing all these things. So I tried to go back to work. And so I was dipped out of this rehab, but now I was in this goldfish bowl as an alcoholic for the first time. I was telling people, I was not at work, but just people were starting to, I was telling people, and I could not cope because I was so fearful of losing my job, because if I lost my job, we might lose this house. And I thought that house building that house and this family and this nest of security was like, you know, that was what I'd worked for. And the fear I had of losing that. So I was back to work, but I couldn't do it without drinking. I'd gone 20 years living and breathing in this fixated state of functioning as an alcoholic. And I started to behave like an alcoholic then. Like I was finding opportunities because I was being watched all the time. And I'd find opportunities to get, and I was finding really creative ways of like delivery services, climbing out of windows to get alcohol. And I was on vodka, like I would drink half a litre of vodka, and then I'd feel that relief that I would be drinking relief. It was relief from this nightmare that I'd been promised. These bullets that I dodged had started to hit me, and I was in my worst nightmare.
So the rehab didn't work for you then?
No. So I just, you know, I know this has been a long-winded thing, but I bit by bit, everything left me within months. My wife couldn't cope. I took redundancy. She left me in the January. And by the March, I was in prison. I was waking up in hospitals. And even when I came out of prison the first time, most things had left. I couldn't let go of my wife, could not let go of her. And like, she was doing the right thing. And she was, you know, all my reasoning had gone by then. I didn't care about anything. I tried to take my own life and ended up in prison. And so I was detoxing in prison the first time. And it was, you know, and it was just about survival. And I couldn't get past that. She was, I could let go of everything apart from her. And, you know, I wasn't supposed to go home. And I ended up going back to prison. And it was only really when I was in prison the second time, when I was like, everybody knew everything. And, I was like exposed. All the masks had fallen off. The drink wasn't working anymore, and I was detoxing. And it brought me into the present moment almost, because in prison you need yourself, like you need your wits. And the only person I had left to rely on was myself. You know, my parents had stuck by me, but they didn't know how to help me. My friends had. I'd portrayed like this life that everybody wanted to be living. And it in 6 months I was in prison, and it was mental. And so I just let myself be the second time, and I needed myself. And when I came out, I realized that, you know, I'd almost disconnected my thoughts from who I was. And I had this thirst for knowledge. You know, I wanted to understand how sleep, exercise, meditation, I was looking into yoga, I was getting back into reading and films, and I changed my diet. I did veganism, you know, I'm a vegan now. And I started, like, it was like being a child again. And everything that was about me started to come back. So I had this, I could never find all the information that I was looking for. So I was frustrated by that, and I wanted to know everything. And I since found out that I'm autistic. So this social anxiety, this need for black and white made a bit more sense. And I was like, well, everything is fragmented. Everybody's trying to find information. And then even on recovery meetings, it's like, we're using Zoom, WhatsApp, PayPal, Google Drive. And I was like, recovery is so amazing that we need a home. And that's where Recovolution started. And 2 years later, I've fallen in love with my children. You know, I'm divorced. I lost everything that I had. But the materials were never going to complete me. No one else was ever going to complete me. Yeah. And I just live as I am. And I look, Recovolution is about, I can help people. And I look to give as much as I can, but the Recovolution is a technology that I think that can connect the world of recovery, and that's what it's about. It's about building a community of people. And, you know, I never didn't know what recovery was about, and had I known what recovery was, recovery's, you know, quite rock and roll. You know, it takes courage to be yourself, and it's brought me back onto this sort of path as to who I was when I was born, and now I can be that person. And I know I can't change my past, but I've forgiven myself, and I can only do right in the day that I'm in. And that's what Recovolution is about. It's about everything that I've learned along the way, and it's to show people that recovery is a journey.
But it's about so much more than just not drinking, isn't it? It's the everything else. Can I just take you back a moment, just ask you something about, you know, where you were talking about, you know, the early days, even from being a child, and this, you know, feeling different, as it were. And, you know, I do, with the work that I do some work with family constellations. And I don't know if you've ever come across that work, but it's fascinating. And it's fascinating when we look back at how our
you know, our early experiences shaped us, and perhaps what limiting beliefs came about. You know, it might not even be our immediate family. It might be ancestors. You know, it can go back many generations. But there's always some fascinating threads in there. You know, hearing your story of your childhood, and obviously you had an okay family and an education, and you went to uni, and you know, there isn't a sort of inbuilt rock bottom in there, if you see what I mean. But there were obviously traumas, in inverted commas, with a little t, if not necessarily with a big T. So I suppose my question is, looking back, what might have helped you back then? Because it's never about what happened to you, is it? It's about what you made it mean. So when you look back at you, to your younger self, what could have supported you in being able to love yourself a bit more, maybe? perhaps that's the question in a nutshell.
Yeah, because that's one thing that I never did, because I always compared myself to others.
Yeah. So what could have helped you? I mean, you may not know the answer to this. It's something I just always find fascinating. You know, it's that we don't have to have another generation of people who are comparing themselves and not loving themselves enough and turning to drink because it makes them feel confident. What could have helped you? What emotional well-being might you have benefited from?
I think a lot of the principles that you learn in recovery, if you could apply them at a younger age, everybody would be well versed for life. You know, all that knowledge that I learned at school is redundant. Most of it I can Google now, you know, that was before Google. So I think just knowing that life's not a race, just be yourself, you know, and that, you know, your mind is separate to your soul.
Yeah.
And like, be who you are, and don't build egos around yourself to protect yourself. Mm. So that's what I'm, you know, if I feel now that, you know, my role is to help my children just be who they are. Like,
be able to sit with feelings as well, I suppose, is a big one, isn't it? If only that were taught in schools, right?
Yeah, and it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
You know, get knocked down 7 times, get up 8. Mm. You know, I think that's the, you know, we're ranked and judged and put on pedestals and knocked down really hard. And it's really difficult to process that. Mm. It's difficult because I was looking for that reason, you know, alcohol being in my family, you know, poor upbringing. I can never find one.
Mm.
It's that expectation that I'd set of myself and my life that I could never fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same with drink. I was like an empty ghost. Yeah. There's never enough that you could drink.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm guessing it must be, you know, amazing, the transformation for you, you know, having had that absolute rock bottom or a series of them. You know, the transformation for you must be amazing. You must have, you know, just so many benefits now that you recognize from being sober. I mean, what would you say is, you know, what was it like for you when you finally sort of realized, okay, there is another way?
I think it was just like realizing that everything that I thought I needed, I already had.
Yeah.
So being able to sit with myself with just peace, like, you can't buy that. It's like, it's just that contentment of just being is, you know, I think, and it's, I take a lot of solace in, like, if you're happy in the moment that you're in, it's all been worth it.
Mm.
And, you know, that's for me is, it's almost like I had to go through what I had to hit those bottoms to feel what I feel today. And I think that's maybe sad, but true. And it's really about trying to show people that, you know, with Recovolution, we're trying to show you don't have to go through these traumas and these experiences. You can be yourself, like, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly my only regret is not doing it sooner.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So Recovolution, as you say, the world's first recovery platform. And you say it's founded by addicts for addicts, effectively. So, you know, what's the aim? Are you, you know, providing
wellness tools and content, and I'm guessing that the connection is a very big part of it. Certainly for me, I've realized that connection is hugely important, and I've found, you know, that people who think, oh no, I'm good on my own, you know, because my partner doesn't drink either, so I'm good, almost never ends up staying the path, because actually connection with like-minded people, I guess you'd agree, is key.
It's fundamental, and I think it is the most important, it's the most universally important thing. So yeah, we're built of content, community and wellness. So content is to try and stop that endless Google search for what you need, and just have this hub, this library of knowledge that people can rely on. That's very, we're very agnostic. So it's more of like a high level overview of all of those facets that I talked about, sleep, nutrition, exercise, all those things that, because recovery is so unique to the individual, it's about opening, almost like being a tree, that you pick what's right for you. And then the community aspect is just that, you know, we make joining the community anonymous if you want it to be, you know, so it's up to you, and you can find your tribe. And that doesn't matter if it's a smart recovery group, a fellowship, a therapy group, or a walking group, or a reading club, you know, like it could be anything. This is about sort of sober living and connecting the world of you know, the world in which we live. And it, you know, people like recovering addicts help addicts. So if you're on that sort of that discovery phase of addiction, you don't have to go to your first meeting on your own. You don't have to go to the doctor and talk about something that you're just going to be signposted somewhere else. You know, you can go in and just, we'll embrace people and we'll just live.
Mm, excellent. Can I just ask, just finally, what is your view of what is on offer generally for people who are finding themselves, you know, in need of something? I mean, I you know, obviously, you know, we want people to look at Recovolution. But when people sometimes, you know, sort of first realise there's something going on, what's your view of what's on offer, you know, in terms of the NHS or whatever else in the UK?
I think the first thing is, like, recovery is possible. Anybody can recover. And we're all on the spectrum at a different, you know, only you can prescribe yourself. And also there's no magic wand. You know, I learned that when I went to rehab, but they're softer hands, and like I needed to be detoxed, but it's such a transformational process that is sort of very unique to the individual. I think awareness is a big thing. We've seen, you know, the government have got a recovery champion now, Dr. Ed Day, which I think's great. But I think it's empowering the individual to, you know, to find their own path. And it's finding the people that are going to get you well, whether that's a rehab, whether that's a therapist, whether that's a support group, whether that's a mix of everything. It's having a place to start this journey that we're on, and it's to know that it's okay to feel like you feel, we've been there and we will get through it. It's going to take some time because you've done such, you've rewired your brain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it takes a little bit of time, and it's that acceptance of, like, it's, you can be who you are.
And yeah, definitely. I think giving people back that belief in themselves is really key, isn't it? Yeah. So Daniel, tell us where we can find more information, the website, and how to find you and the work that you do.
Yeah, so recovolution.com. We've got a myriad of support groups, organisations and charities, as well as members already on the platform. And yeah, we're really excited about, you know, this is really the technology that can drive recovery. It's about, you know, building software that matters.
Yeah, great. As you say, it's the recovery and the evolution. It's really important to mix both, yeah. Daniel, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Likewise, you know, sorry for talking a lot, but
got a lot to say. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, Daniel. And I love the way we ended that interview just coming back to this wonderful concept of you can be who you truly are. You can create your best life, you know, the life you don't need to escape from. It's so true. So it's recovolution.com. And don't forget, if you want to look back, you know, if you want to sort of think more about where this trauma piece may have come from, because of course it can be, you know, held in at a cellular level. I run family constellations. If you're listening to this ahead of Sunday 17th, we have a family constellations workshop on Sunday the 17th in Hearts, and there's still a few spaces left, so just drop me a message or an email if that's something you're interested in. Just go to thesoberclub.com and click on events and you'll find it there. I know it's going to be a hot day. We'll have iced alcohol-free drinks and hopefully some watermelon, and we'll keep everyone cool. So I promised you this piece on sober holidays, rocking it sober in the sunshine. And I thought before I get into some tips, I'd just share with you a couple of posts that were on our Sober Club group recently. One woman said, I'm back after a sober holiday. I am so proud of myself. Having alcohol-free beer and mocktails at most places helped, but so did preparing myself mentally. I reminded myself what I turn into when I'm drunk. I played the tape forward and I reminded myself how a hangover steals time from a holiday. I also really questioned why alcohol was needed to enjoy a holiday and why not have a refreshing non-alcoholic drink. I savoured the mornings, loved being able to remember the whole holiday, and felt so grateful not to waste a second. And the money saved from not drinking, I had a facial, a massage and a manicure. Isn't that fabulous? That literally sums up everything I'm going to share with you. But don't worry, I'm still going to share some stuff anyway. But that's it, isn't it? Remind yourself of the amazing benefits of staying sober, because hangovers in the heat really, really hurt. Play that tape forward and just think how good you're going to feel without this. I got another few tips from Sober Club members while we're on it. Jen says, I always ask myself, what would I gain if I drank alcohol? How could it possibly serve me? I play the tape forward and I remind myself why I've made this change. And use all the tools in your toolbox. It will become second nature to whip them out. Someone else says, change the thought pattern. How fabulous to have a spa while you're on holiday with an alcohol-free drink. Just change those associations. And another one says, a spa bath is a great thing to do. You can relax with a face mask, a podcast, a body scrub, a new book. And someone else gives a tip to there was someone else struggling, worrying about a holiday. And someone says, start afresh, create your new corner spa bath experience. You can train yourself away from previous associations. Very good advice. Could a precious piss up in the bath turn into a mindful moment to fully be you? This is Emma. This is tricky, but with some consistency, it's absolutely possible to shake yourself free. So that was just a few of our members' tips, because it's a conversation we've been having, of course, for people who are headed off on holidays or headed off on spa weekends or whatever it might be. And of course, you know, as I say, the weather is going to be ridiculous in the UK. And, you know, lots of people taking time off work, they're doing, the patterns are disrupted, and that's when the wine witch can creep in. There's no doubt about it. Expectations that you'll be drinking along with being in the sunshine tend to run very high. So here's a few top tips for you. I haven't sort of sectioned this out beautifully, you know, ordered or anything, but nevertheless, I'll throw some stuff at you. And the first tip, which you have heard me say a million times, is do your prep. It doesn't work if you simply say to yourself, oh, I really want to stay sober while I'm on holiday, or I really want to remain alcohol-free for these next few days while it's hot in the UK. It's really important to me. And then do nothing. That won't happen. You will almost certainly be railroaded over, particularly if you're with, you know, family and friends who drink. So do your own preparation. Set your plan. Do a whoop, literally whoop your sober holiday or your alcohol-free days in the sunshine. And the whoop, just to remind you, I know many of you have done it before, heard me say it before, very simple psychological tool, WOOP. The W stands for wish, O for outcome, O for obstacle, P for plan. The wish is, what do you want? Sum it up in a sentence. What is it you want? What is the wish? Is it to have a wonderful weekend, alcohol-free, being happy, you know, having fun, socializing or resting or recuperating, whatever it is for you? Is it that you want to have a fabulous holiday that you'll remember, you know, that you'll be able to be fully conscious for and really thoroughly enjoy, you know, obviously sober? So that might be your wish. So get your top line and write that down. It's really important to nail that. Don't be woolly about that at all. Don't go, oh, well, it would be nice. Be really, really clear on your wish. That the outcome is, what will that actually look like? If you get that wish, put the detail around it. And this is where you've got to use your imagination, because if you can't see it, you ain't going to get it. You've got to be able to visualize yourself, see yourself. This is where you might want to do a bit of planning. I'm going to come on to that. So if you're going away somewhere, perhaps somewhere you haven't been before, do some research. What's in the area? You know, what lovely things can you go and see? You know, what is there to do? Can you book some exercise classes? Can you have some treatments? Can you? When I was away last week, they were offering all kinds of amazing things that I would never have thought of 5 years ago. They were offering language classes by the pool, for goodness sake. You know, fabulous things. So have a look, prep in advance of what is going to be in the area you're going to be, as it were. Or if you're staying at home and it's just a few days in the sunshine, plan ahead and think, what would I like to do? What will feel good for me? Actually plan it, write it down as an outcome, and visualize yourself doing that. Visualize how you'll feel when that has happened. So, you know, you might want to just play that tape forward as you write that outcome and visualize yourself coming on the Sober Club or whatever group you're part of, and that, or dropping me a message. Visualize yourself dropping me a message at the end of these few days or at the end of your holiday and saying, I did it. I absolutely rocked it sober and I loved it. I loved having that time that I'd planned and having that rest for me in the sunshine. So that's the outcome. And that's very important, to put the detail on it. Literally put the detail in. See yourself in that situation. And then the obstacle, obviously, is for being realistic about what might trip you up. If anything is going to trip you up, what will it be? Will it be that you don't have alcohol-free drinks, that you're at an event or you're at a party or you've got friends pop round unexpectedly and you only have alcohol in the house? Will that trip you up? Will it be that you've got very persuasive friends or family who you're very nervous about meeting because you've got the idea that they're going to try and persuade you? Will it be just the thoughts in your head that you know they're already starting to seed? Oh, well, you know, one won't hurt. Actually, it will. You know, what will it be? Be realistic. Write those obstacles down. And then obviously P is for plan. So how do you plan so that those obstacles will not, you know, get in the way? And go through each one systematically. Become your own guru, right? Your own coach. Work it out systematically. If it's about the drinks, prep the drinks. I would recommend everybody preps a really good selection of alcohol-free drinks. Loads of sparkling water. Get some lovely glasses. Pimp your drinks. Get some fresh mint, some lemons, some limes. Buy whatever mocktail ingredients you like. Get some botanical stuff and some soda water and get everything you need. Literally throw money at this, because this is worth it. Have your alcohol-free drinks. Have your dehydrating drinks. Have the snacks you love. You know, have some watermelon. Have some, you know, have the things you're going to enjoy and you're going to like, so that you don't have that feeling of deprivation, because that's where you end up drinking. When you start, the unconscious mind starts thinking, well, this is not fair. Look at everyone else with their lovely, chill glasses of, you know, toxic liquid. But of course, that's not what we think. So you need something so that you don't feel deprived, right? So do that prep. When it comes to friends, social situations, prep them. Sometimes we end up drinking because we feel bad for other people, for God's sake. But often we're such people pleasers. So give them a heads up. Very firm, but, you know, pretty low key. Just, okay, just want to give you a heads up. I'm not drinking alcohol. You can give a reason or not give a reason. It's entirely up to you. But then say the really important piece. You don't have to worry about me. I'm good. They need to know that they don't have to worry about you. Otherwise, you'll all end up trying to people please each other. So just whatever way you would talk to your friends, give them a heads up. Text, email, ring them up, whatever it is, or family. Just give them a heads up. And then when the conversation comes up, which it sure as hell is like will, particularly if it's early days for you, you simply acknowledge, just don't make a big thing about it at all, and change the conversation. There's a fabulous line in, I read, when I was on holiday, I read Marion Keyes' follow-up to Rachel's Holidays called Again, Rachel. Such a fab book. Perfect book for by the beach. Grab yourself a copy of that. That's a great thing to read over the next few days. There's a fabulous line in that book where she's out with people who drink alcohol. And in the book, the character has been sober for, God, I don't know, 25 years or something. But still, the conversation comes around to, oh, it must, don't you miss it? Oh, it must be so awful for you, you know, as they're quaffing back their booze. And she says in the book something like, I did a conversational swerve so far that I almost got whiplash. It's just something like that. And it really made me laugh because I thought that's exactly what we have to do. We have to have our conversation ready. It is a bit like acting work to start with, but God, it's worth it. So when people start on the, oh, how awful for you, oh, poor you, you can't drink, just literally acknowledge, oh, I'm great with my whatever I'm drinking. By the way, you haven't told me about your holiday. Whatever the conversational swerve is, have it prepared and ready. So all of these things are about the prep, okay? Have those alcohol-free drinks, take them with you. If you're going off on your holiday, pack them in your bag. You know, even if you need to resort to a 100ml thing of, you know, 0% botanical to have on the plane with a tonic. Just do whatever you need to do to get you through those early days and early weeks. Absolutely do that prep. So let me just check that I've given you the whoop. The whoop is always the most fantastic one because it covers everything. But just a few more things I wanted to just mention. Obviously, I've mentioned drinks. Keep the ritual. Change the ingredients. Most, if you're going abroad on holiday, most places are really good with alcohol-free beer. Most places are very good with mocktails. Ask them to make something with less sugar. That was my top tip from my holiday. I had virgin mojitos, but I just asked them to use hardly any sugar because otherwise they can get, you know, a bit too syrupy. And just make sure that you always have a nice glass. Even if you're having a glass of water, of course you can have it in a lovely glass. You know, I've said it before, it really drives me bonkers that a glass has to be named by a type of alcohol, for God's sake. So obviously the drinks, what you're going to drink is important. Make sure you've prepped that. Absolutely see your holiday or your weekend or your rejuvenation time as self-care and think of it as extreme self-care. Like, how can I really properly do something that's going to lift my spirits here? And think about how you're going to entertain yourself and keep inspired. So I mentioned, you know, Marion Keyes' book. Grab yourself a copy of my book if you haven't read it. There's a plug. Happy, Healthy, Sober. That's good sunshine reading. But do get yourself some good books. You know, get some novels, get some quitlet, get whatever you like to do. If you've got a hobby, focus on up-leveling, you know, if you're into crafts or whatever, make sure you've got kit with you. Download some podcasts. I have got hundreds of these podcasts and, of course, there's many others. You know, download a movie, whatever it is that does it for you, take it with you. It's the prep that matters. So prepare for some downtime, you know, and for something that you're going to want to keep yourself inspired. Mention the drinks, mention the heads up bit. Be prepared to be a little bit adventurous. It's a holiday, for God's sake. So be willing to be a bit disruptive with yourself. So if you know that what you do on holiday, you know, is crawl out bed late, you know, hang by a pool, maybe have a leisurely swim and then start drinking. Well, that ain't going to happen, is it? And why would you want it to? Just change it around. What was so magical for me on my holiday last week was getting up really, really early. You know, you catch the sunbeds, right? and going for a really great walk along the beach when not many other people are around. I mean, yes, granted, the healthy people are around. The people who are going for a run and walking their dogs. The people that look healthy are around. Everyone else is in bed. So really, really enjoy those early mornings. And think to yourself, what could I do on my holiday that I don't usually do? And as I say, perhaps there is a class you can book yourself onto, some kind of water sport, something, whatever does it for you. But do something different. It's so brilliant for your mindset, for your brain cells to do something different. It's great for the cognitive brain. So prep ahead and decide, well, what am I going to do that's different? And as my Sober Club member said, that might be just that you treat yourself. So while everyone else is doing their goddamn drinking games or whatever they do, go and have a massage. You know, while they go to the wine tasting place, you go and try some Nordic walking. I did some of that on my holiday as well. Bizarre, isn't it? So prep ahead and be willing to be disruptive with yourself. Do something different. It's super good for you when you do something different for yourself. If you're going to be socialising, as I've already said, prep ahead what you will say. It might be strangers. You might be with people you don't know well, so you don't need to tell them you're not drinking. But if it comes up in conversation, prep ahead as to what you'll say, preferably very little. It's nobody else's goddamn business. And interestingly enough, you may find you're surprised at how many other people don't drink too. It is interesting when you start to notice. I remember on holiday last week, so many memories come back to me of other holidays where I'd have been straight for that, you know, that goddamn tap that does the wine. I mean, what the hell was I even thinking? You know, lunchtime at at that beach bar constantly topping up the booze. It's an awful memory when I remembered it. And of course I could see people doing that. Of course I could. But I could also see lots and lots of people just like me who were just on the water, you know, and they seem real happy too. So you will find that not everyone drinks when you start actually noticing. So then the other top tip that I would give you is, even though you're on holiday, stay connected. Now, you know, this is a little bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because I was told off by my Sober Club members because I told them I was going on holiday, and then of course I couldn't resist popping up and commenting on some posts. You know, normally I'm in there 24/7, but I didn't do that at all. I did absolutely take a break, but I couldn't resist checking in. But in a way, I think that's a good thing to do. I'm not saying be doom scrolling and be on your social media all the time. One of the best things about being on holiday was just getting away from the goddamn, you know, misery of mainstream media, to be honest. But do stay connected in whatever way that is, so that you've got that lifeline, so that you can post a message if you want to, so that you can, you know, just idly look at what other people are doing. And when you see other people rocking it, it just gives you that extra little reminder. So stay connected. And then I think probably the final thing is have your SOS ready. Have that lifeline ready. Absolutely know in advance what you're going to do if you get that wobble, if you get that really strong craving. You know, if none of the other stuff works that we've been talking about, if the prepping ahead hasn't worked, if the alcohol-free drink isn't cutting it, if you really are getting that sort of raging voice in the head, and you've kind of almost seeded it all for yourself, then plan ahead for if that were to happen. Plan your SOS. I'm creating a program which is a kind of an emergency, what to do in an emergency, as it were, because it is an emergency. It really is. You do not want to break this. This is the best thing, if you've ditched the booze, that you will ever do for your health and well-being, and for those around you, by the way. So don't blow it. Don't blow it because the sun's out or because other people are drinking. It's not worth it. So plan for what your lifeline will be. Who will you ring up? Who will you text? What will you do for 15 minutes to change your mindset if that comes upon you, as it were, if you get the sound of the wine witch? So there's your top tips. I really hope you have a lovely few days in the sunshine. And if you are heading off on holiday, there'll be a blog post on the Sober Club as well. Just go to thesoberclub.com with a few more bits and pieces to keep you inspired. But you just have to trust me on this one. This is freedom. This is actually freedom. One thing that going away does is it takes you back to all those memories of when you were drinking. And, you know, as I say, just reminding myself of how it used to be, that I would be exhausted waking up, that when I got home from a holiday, I'd need another holiday. But I don't feel like that this time. I actually do feel energised. And it's not just holidays that I'm talking about here. I was at a function the other night, and even though it was a health event, there was literally, even after all these years, I'm shocked actually, there was literally just champagne on offer and warm orange juice already poured in glasses. That's it. Literally, that was it on offer at the drinks reception. I was shocked, really shocked. I hadn't even taken my own. I tell you guys to do that. I hadn't done it. It's not a thing. I've been sober for so many years. It honestly isn't a thing for me. But of course, I noticed that. So I asked for some sparkling water. It took them, I kid you not, I checked my watch, 20 minutes before they could find me a bottle of sparkling water. But they did. And I was very grateful for that. And then when we sat down for dinner, really lovely dinner, lovely venue, couple of bottles of wine on the table, white wine on the table and a red wine. And I just sat noticing what was going on at that table. You know, a couple of people, you could see that they were kind of weighing it up. Okay, there's two bottles there. The six of us on the table. How's this going to play out? They were probably delighted when they saw that I wasn't touching it. And there were people there who kind of, you know, I kind of watched them as the night went on. And you know, one person definitely polished off one whole bottle and then went on to the red. And then there's the conversation about, shall we order more? And, oh my God, I felt so sad when I remembered that so would have been me. I would have been the one encouraging everyone to drink more of that wine on the table so that we could order more. It made me feel really sad for what I'd been, really, for who I'd been. But incredible freedom that, you know, even though there were no alcohol-free drinks there at all, other than water, I mean, you know, it gets boring. Let's be really honest. Not that drinking makes it not boring. It always would have been boring, but the drinking masks that. I used to tell myself, oh no, I'm good, you know, chatting away about absolutely nothing for hours on end. I wasn't really. I was just there for the booze, you know. And it's such freedom when you can acknowledge when you've had enough and you can absolutely acknowledge that you do not need this toxic liquid. So I was able to, I wasn't able to stay to the end anyway, but I was able to leave and drive myself home. I mean, how amazing is that? Actual freedom. So anyways, you had a hell of a pep talk from me this week, didn't you? Thanks once again to our sponsors, Recovolution. And I hope some of those tips for sober holidays and rocking it in the sunshine have helped. Don't forget, just in case you're listening to this before Sunday, Family Constellations in Hertfordshire on Sunday. I know it's going to be hot, but we'll keep you as cool as it's possible to. Drop me a message. You know where to find me. Always reach out. You know, social media, you know where to find me, at Janie Lee Grace. And obviously check out all the stuff that we have at thesoberclub.com. And I'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.